Welcome back to Following Noah Donna Stormlight Podcast. This week is episode 197, and we are in Shadows of Self, book 2 of Era 2 of Mistborn. We are going through chapters 8 through 19, basically the entirety of part 2 of the book. Paul, how are you?
I'm great, Trevor. We are covering a lot in, you know, almost all of part 2, but I want to emphasize the almost, because I feel like this is going to start to head somewhere exciting that I feel like we've intentionally been kept from. So I'm excited to talk about this and to read after this as well. So
there is a bit of a cliffhanger at 19 that I left you guys on. Just a smidge one. Elliot, how are you?
I'm doing pretty good. I had a rather exhausting week, so I'm running on a lot of caffeine, but I'm ready to go. Caffeine is pumping through the veins. Let's do this.
Sounds good. Let's roll intro, and then we'll get a summary of basically the entire book from Elliot. All right, Elliot, chapters 8 through 19. Go ahead.
Yeah, solid 50% of the book. Here it comes. The middle 50%. Okay. Deep breath. Bear with me. I'm going to try and just hit the kind of major events throughout the chapters. I'm going to leave stuff out. We'll talk about some of it. Others, I might have to breeze by it for the interest of time, but here we go. Chapter 8. Wax tells a bit of a story about him and his uncle from back in the day, a story about this coin that has like a tiny defect that becomes like a secret message or a symbol later in the story. I think this is the object that we wondered before, where we left off last episode, of what was it that would have scared Wax so much. It's this special little coin, right, that he associates with his uncle. So get the backstory on that. Got some answers there. Then Wax and Steris and eventually Wayne and Marcy go to a party on the top of a skyscraper, and they are perusing the party. There's some entertaining scenes of both Wax doing goofy things and Wayne, of course, doing goofier things at the party. We bump into Milan at the party. We've got another Chandra on the scene. And then, of course, Wax has a run-in with Bleeder, or Bleeder's accomplice or minion. We're not exactly 100% sure. I think it is Bleeder, actually, in that chapter. And Wax goes chasing after Bleeder out of the party, out into the town. Taxi car gets crushed in the chase. RIP taxi car. Lots of fighting goes down. Milan comes to the rescue. Milan saves Wax from the baddies, and Bleeder does not capture him. So we got another member of the party. Milan is helping us out. There's a cool escape scene where Wax jumps into the canal and uses his allomancy to like swim underwater this ridiculously long distance to get away from everyone.
Submarine himself away.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. What else happens? Let's see. We're worried about a bunch of people because we don't know exactly who Bleeder's going after. So Wax is trying to save Steris' father. Wax is trying to save the governor. Succeeds in saving both of those throughout these chapters, but we do not save a random priest that gets murdered by Bleeder. It's kind of starting this serious unrest in the city. Specifically between the two of the religious sects, I can never say that word. The Pathians versus the Survivorists, right? Is kind of the two major bodies there that are going against each other. So Bleeder's just kind of
and something to point out there, the Survivorists are very religious and strict in their ways, and then the Pathians are way more relaxed. Not that they're not dedicated, but they're way more loose with their the way they follow their religion. So some of them, the survivorists accuse the Pathians of being sacrilegious, basically. Mm-hmm. And there's some tension there already, and Bleeder seems to be shoving a wedge in that little chink that's already there.
And because I'm trying to keep it all straight, survivorists are obviously, like, Kelsier is their figure that they're right. following. Pathians are following Harmony?
Harmony, right.
I believe okay. so, yeah.
Got it. All right. I'm going too slow, so let's speed up here. Let's see. Wayne spends some time in the pub mixing everyone's drinks together, and apparently everyone loves it, and it's great. Wax, let's see. Oh, Milan gives Wax a special serum that can slow a Chondra. So that's kind of his strategy, is hit Bleeder with the serum, slow her down, capture her, get her back to the Chondra so they can fix her because she's broken. Like, that's the strategy at this point.
And he's already used one by the end of this episode.
He does chuck one at her in a rather exciting scene where Wayne uses a speed bubble to kind of equal the powers of Bleeder's steel running. Yeah, so Bleeder's moving super fast, but then Wayne can do the super fast thing too. So they kind of do the super fast thing together, chucks the serum at Bleeder, but misses. So we've lost one of those. Wayne is chasing down lots of kind of loose ends, trying to catch up to Bleeder. Wayne and Marcy are kind of doing the same. Let's see here. They're trying to defend the governor, successfully do that, although Bleeder gets right up next to him and kills, like, the guard that's protecting him. Guard sacrifices himself. Governor's still alive. Bleeder gets away. Wax finds a clue. He finds some glowing fungus on a robe that Bleeder was wearing, and they're able to put two and two together and learn that fungus comes from the Chondra homeland. So Bleeder must be living in the Chondra homeland. And that's actually where we leave off at the end of this, is Wax goes to the Chondra homeland, and we get left on a little bit of a cliffhanger there. In the meantime, Marcy uncovers a bunch of letters that the governor has written that seems to point to how corrupt he is. So now Marcy is kind of faced with this dilemma of, should I even be protecting this governor? And yeah, I think that covers most of the main points.
Well done. Well done. Okay. So go ahead, Paul.
Well, you shouldn't have passed the mic to me. All I was going to say was, Elliot, you passed the test. You made it through all the, there's a lot of recap, because a lot of ground covered.
Yes.
We have a city. At the beginning of the episode, the city's kind of just like in a state of unrest. But by the end of the episode, they're beginning to draw parallels between, like, this night that seems to be going on forever, that, like, over like six chapters, it's still the same day, and the night that the Lord Ruler was overthrown. Did you guys catch those references where they're like, Bleeder must be doing this on purpose and calling back to the old days of revolution and stuff like that? So we have a lot of unrest and all nearly to the point of revolt and mobs breaking out. So, we're beginning to learn it's all at the hands of Bleeder. Bleeder is the one. Elliot, you mentioned either last episode or the episode before that Sanderson takes like two pages to talk about how high the food prices are.
Yes.
And like, they're walking through this market and everybody's complaining about the apple prices and the grain prices. And there's, you know, some vague mentions of a flood out north or east, or I don't remember where it was. But it comes out in this episode that apparently Bleeder, like, months ago went and did that to start putting pressure on the economy and start putting pressure anywhere she can before she really makes her big moves in this episode. So they, we have Ellendale that is not in a good shape. Paul, what are you most excited to talk about here?
So what was most exciting for me was Milan entering the scene in
good
this
choice.
Episode. So, you know, I wasn't visually reading the book. I was using the audiobook, right? So just confirming, just double checking, because I didn't see any spellings. This is like the Milan, like from Era One, the I guess was she kind of like the love interest for Tensoon in that it was,
if I remember correctly. So that's how I interpreted it.
Right.
Yeah. So I did interpret it as a love interest for Tensoon. So most people I think disagree with me, and it's more like his younger sister is how he views her.
At least an endearing character in Tensoon's life, I guess.
But you know. Paul, you mentioned spelling. Elliot, there's actually two different spellings. Do you want to tell him?
There is, and Sanderson tried to trick us a little bit. I saw right through it from the start. When she shows up at the party where you don't for sure know that it is the Milan from before, it's spelled like the Italian city, Milan, and then later, like halfway through, it's mentioned that she like goes to pronouncing her name slightly different, but I immediately was like, wait, Milan. We've seen a character like that before. I bet this is her undercover, and sure enough, it was. It was only like 3 pages after I guessed that was revealed. So,
yeah, by the time she shows up in the alley to help Wax, like the next chapter later, she's then spelling her name like she was in Mistborn Era 1. So I guess now would be a good time to do this. Open the Discord. There's some good art of Milan by Miranda Meeks. This is actually included in the Mistborn Era 2 Leatherbounds. So you may have seen this art before, but I think this is a really good Mistborn Era 2 art. There isn't actually that much. I mean, we're used to Stormlight fan art where there's like a massive library out there of so many different people making a bunch of fan art. There is not a lot of content out there for specifically Mistborn Era 2. So, but this one is a really good one. I really enjoy Miranda Meeks' piece here. What do you guys think?
I knew this looked familiar. I'm glad you mentioned that it's in the Leatherbound, because I'm pretty sure when I was at the previous Dragonsteel, I saw this, or maybe somewhere. I was looking at the book and I saw this art, and I was like, "Oh, that's neat. That's someone I definitely don't know." I did at that time had read about Milan in Era One, but I had no idea that's who this was. So that's really neat. Yeah, I think this is excellent art. It's really cool.
I love the concept of her emerald skeleton. I think that's super cool. And some of the scenes with her would get pretty wacky in like a visual adaptation where she's revealing herself to various people, you know, letting her skeleton show through her skin. Or there's these scenes where it describes like her skin peeling back to reveal her true form and all these kind of freaky things, or her reaching into flesh pockets in her body to withdraw, you know, weapons and stuff like that. Yeah. Mistborn Era 2 would get a little wacky
I feel like he had a lot of fun with this and with this character in this setting of just kind of making her, you know, she's a Chondra, and so all of this is like probably fairly normal to her of just, you know, pulling back skin and having something stored inside or whatever, you know. I think the notable one is, doesn't she like pull a gun out of her breast or something?
Yes.
It's like, oh, these things are so helpful, you know?
Yeah.
So much room, you know? And I thought that was really funny.
Yeah.
Her and Wayne really make a duo when they're
no joke
working together. The shots flying back and forth and the ridiculous stories the two of them tell are pretty entertaining.
I think maybe my favorite scene in this entire episode is when she's revealing herself to Aradel, the chief of police, and Marcy knows Milan at this point, but then Milan presents herself as like this grand deity from like the olden days and speaking with like old English and a bunch of who's and what for is, and as she says, and I think it's a really funny scene that she afterwards to Marcy, she says, "Oh, I was just showing him what he was expecting to see, and I can do that. I can be divine when I need to be." I really enjoy Milan and how Brandon Sanderson portrays her on page. What else? We talked about Wayne for a second. Let's talk about Wayne. He is kind of along for the ride with Wax. Bleeder seems to be specifically targeting Wax, which we'll come back to those two here in a second. But Wayne, in this set of chapters, I feel like he's more worried about the city, like the unrest in the city. And so he spends like an entire chapter before he meets Milan just trying to quiet down a pub. Like, he just goes in there. I think Brandon Sanderson plays with some like point of view in this scene where Wayne describes it as like a church, and it's not until like halfway through the scene that you realize he's talking about a pub. And it, I don't know, you'll understand what I mean if you've read it recently, but he's just walking around saying like, "Oh, and they're so pious, they're knocked out drunk, and what are they talking about?" Anyway, it's just a very interesting scene. I thought that was a little jarring the first time I read it. It took me a couple seconds to realize what was going on.
I was a little caught off guard too, and then it did seem like Brandon was experimenting with a different writing style for that chapter and that chapter only. It was a little out of place, but at the same time, Wayne's a little out of place. Like, he's a different kind of guy, and so to get a POV that's a little bit odd fits his character. So it didn't, you know, yank me out of the immersion per se. It was just more of a, yeah, being in Wayne's head is a little bit of a weird place.
I have to say, I think taking away from these chapters overall, I think one of the things I'm most excited for going forward is actually seeing more of Wayne. I feel like it's just, and the thing is, I couldn't give you many good specifics or quotes right now, I guess, because we covered a lot of ground. But it felt like all the Wayne chapters and POV moments, it felt like there's just a lot of allusions to him knowing more. There's kind of this conversation that he has that it's like, you know, you're just playing, I guess, I don't remember for sure. I think it's with Milan where she's like, "You're just playing stupid," or something like that. I don't remember who it's with, to be honest. I really don't.
It's when they're stacking the coasters and Wax is saying, "No, Wayne is smart," and that's when Milan recognizes that is, "You're just playing dumb. Like, you can actually be really smart in situations when you need to be." And he's like, "Yeah, nah, don't give away my secret."
Yeah, exactly. But that and just other things have kind of led me to believe, as we've kind of seen, feels like he has maybe more genuine remorse about things in his past, or all sorts, you know, emotions about things in his past. And it just makes me think that he definitely knows more than we think right now. You know, he's kind of been the comic relief character along to kind of buddy up with Wax. But I think there's probably a lot more genuine about him than maybe we originally thought. So I'm really curious, really kind of eager to see more about Wayne in the future.
I want to shift to Bleeder. Are you guys ready to talk about Bleeder? Okay. So this is, and I think I accidentally spoiled this maybe last episode. Milan sits our heroes down and explains a little bit more about Bleeder. And I mentioned last episode that Bleeder was the Lord Ruler's personal Chondra back in the day. But we didn't actually get that information until this episode, so I apologize about that. But she was secluded from the other Chondra, so it didn't like really surprise the other Chondra that she went rogue, because she was always a little weird, always a little off-putting. Milan mentions a couple things of the Lord Ruler probably had her impersonate some inquisitors, during his time of employing her. So that would have given her information about hemallergy, and maybe that's how she's accomplishing what she's accomplishing in this book. She's trying to, Milan is trying to preserve Bleeder's life because Milan drops the number of 300. There's only 300 Chondra in the world. And so if there's only 300 of you on the planet, even if she's going crazy, she just wants her spike to be put back in and her to be sane again. She doesn't want her to be killed. So there's an interesting tension there, I think, between Milan and most of our heroes. But Bleeder, we get two different dialogue scenes in this episode between Wax and Bleeder, and Wax is actually trying to figure out how, like, what magic system's at play here, because he can hear her in his head. And so then he deliberately tries to find a weakness. Like, both times he starts walking in a direction to see if that'll to figure out the rules. Does she have to be within a certain distance to talk to me? Can she hear me if I, you know, lower my voice or raise my voice? And, you know, like, he's trying to manipulate to find a weakness or find the rules that Bleeder is playing by. We get two separate dialogue scenes, but what is Bleeder's motive? She's done all these crazy things in this episode throughout the entirety of part two here. What is she doing?
But before I try to answer the motive question, I've been trying to figure out the rules of Bleeder's telepathy along with Wax. And what I've been trying to key into is when and when not does Wax have his earring in? And we always get told that whenever he tries to talk to Harmony, it'll say he puts it in, he talks to Harmony, or he tries to talk to Harmony, but then remembers he doesn't have his earring, so he can't. It, as far as I've noticed, hasn't mentioned the earring in relation to the Bleeder sections, because I've been wondering if it's a hemallergy thing. But as far as the larger motive, I'm a little stumped on this one, because it just seems like chaos, ruin maybe, for a very relatable word, is what Bleeder seems to be after here. Just kind of driving general anarchy, I guess. But you talked a little earlier about the similarities between this and the events of Era One that Kelsier orchestrated, of causing the common people to rise up and overthrow the nobles, the aristocracy, is kind of exactly what Bleeder is doing. Are we just going for a, like, irony? Is Bleeder trying to throw that back in the face of the heroes to say, hey, see, watch, I can do it too. I can overthrow your system with the same thing you did to overthrow mine, if there is some kind of loyalty that still exists between Palm, I guess is her true name, and the Lord Ruler or something like that. But something inside me is a little suspicious that maybe there's something bigger than that going on. Because it's the Cosmere. There's usually something bigger going on.
So we have two separate dialogue scenes, and I think we can maybe try to figure out her motives with what Wax asks her and the dialogue back and forth. I'm going to read three different quotes. All three are from Bleeder to Wax in a private conversation. Bleeder says, "There are no good men. Choice is an illusion, lawman. There are those created to be selfish and those created to be selfless. This does not make them good or evil. I need to free everyone in this city. Harmony crushes his palm against society, smothering it. He claims to not interfere, but then moves us like pieces on a board." And then this is later in chapter 16. "Have you asked him, Harmony? Have you asked why he didn't save Lessie? You could have saved Lessie so easily with his help. He's supposed to be God. He could have snapped his fingers and made Tan drop dead on the spot, but he didn't." Those three quotes make me think that she's directing or she's targeting Harmony specifically, and more specifically, she's trying to target Wax's relationship with Harmony. Like, it seems to be fairly personal between Bleeder and Wax, but Wax doesn't understand why. And Wax and Bleeder is trying to sow the seed that Miles in the last book planted of driving a wedge between Wax and Harmony. What do you guys think of these quotes?
Definitely trying to create doubt. Definitely trying to feed Wax some questioning thoughts. I agree with you. It seems like Bleeder's directly targeting Harmony here. Or Wax. The targeting Wax is kind of strange to me. Targeting Harmony, yeah. Sure. Got a vendetta out against the god. Maybe Harmony, maybe there's some truth to what Bleeder's getting at, and Harmony is not the benevolent god that we would hope that Sazed would be. But why is Wax the key in all this? I don't understand that part.
I mean, I feel like these are the questions that we're going to continue to be posed with, as in, like, so, okay, I'm going to back up a little bit here. So, kind of the general premise right now, like, Bleeder, to our knowledge, I feel like is kind of the, I'm not going to say the big bad, because we know of other, you know, there's obviously notable people in Wax's life that have been kind of like the main nemesis, I guess, like Bloody Tan and such, you know.
And his uncle.
Yes. Yeah. There's kind of a lot being alluded to, and I feel like it's felt fairly straightforward. I mean, not straightforward in that there's questions we still need answered, but straightforward in like, Wax is just kind of out there to get rid of bad guys, I guess. And I feel like this, as well as like the previous moments we've seen of like somebody else moves us and all the things that are alluded to, it's planting a lot of doubt and like questions for Wax and for us, I feel like, as the reader a little bit. I don't know. I feel like this is just, maybe I'm being too like meta or whatever. I feel like this is just kind of the like insert our like ethical dilemma question here that the character has to figure out, you know, as they go along. I feel like, I don't actually know, but I feel like Wax was pretty unfazed by this. I feel like he's talked with Harmony and is kind of like, oh no, you're obviously the bad guy here and unjustified in what you're saying, but you know, I guess I felt fairly unfazed by this ethical question. Maybe that just means I have too much faith in Sazed. I don't know.
I wasn't too shook by it either. For me, simply because I feel like Harmony's been at least consistent. Harmony has said, I want there to be free will. I want you people to be able to be free to choose your path. So no, I'm not going to intervene, even when I could save a life. I'm going to try and stay out of it as much as I can. Bleeder seems to be trying to point at that as, oh, he could have saved Lessie. Why didn't he? It's like, okay, he could have, but he has stated that he believes he shouldn't. So the fact that he didn't is at least consistent with what he's telling Wax about.
Yeah, I fully agree. Of like, you know, it is obviously tragic what happened with Lessie, like absolutely tragic. But I mean, if you zoom out from Wax, like, you know, unfortunately that happens with many people, but it's just kind of the struggle of having that kind of gift of free will, I guess, you know, is if it's no longer in Harmony's hands, then, you know, it's just kind of people doing the bad stuff, you know?
There's also a rather different element of this era from the last one, in that I don't feel much of a personal connection to Lessie, which maybe that's terrible and I should, but Wax is obviously very torn up about that. Leslie was his wife, right? They got married at some point, I think.
So yes, correct.
He's very crushed, traumatized by all that. Totally get it. Me as a reader, though, I've not seen more than 15 minutes of screen time on Leslie. I don't feel the emotions that Wax is compared to, like, this is kind of a strange comparison, but compared to like Kelsier and Mare in Arrow One, we didn't get a whole lot of screen time on Mare either, but I felt like I had a little bit of a connection there. I felt a little bit of what Kelsey was feeling there. I'm almost at the point where I'm still slightly suspicious of Leslie. Like, I don't know that so? Leslie, I don't know necessarily that Leslie is who she said she was. And so, I don't know. This whole dilemma, Bleeder trying to push Wax against Harmony using Leslie, I can see why it would be effective on Wax. It's not very effective on me.
Sure.
That's an interesting point. Yeah, I feel like I would not change anything about the original prologue chapter that we read, where we see this backstory and where Leslie dies. I think that sets a good amount of backstory, and so we understand Wax's perspective as we read forward. However, I think you might be kind of right. Like, it's kind of sad to say, but like, knowing that Leslie is gone, and I don't think it's like the, I could be wrong, I don't think it's like the, oh, she's not actually dead, but she's dead in the physical realm, but we'll see her later or whatever. Could be, but I've kind of like turned my mind off of that already, you know, I guess. So anyways.
Fair enough.
Maybe we're just cold-hearted, though, Elliot. I don't know.
Maybe. I feel a little probably bad saying so. It.
Yeah. It's for the record, it's not a, yeah, no, I don't, you know, I don't care that she died. We're just not as invested in her, I guess. I suppose.
All right. Let's then shift to the governor. So the governor is pretty clearly, by the end of this episode, proven corrupt. Like, his brother, he was covering for his brother. He has swayed his vote or swayed different bills that have passed based on these letters that Marisee has gathered. And those may have also been planted by Bleeder, but it does seem to stack up that he is corrupt. What are your guys' feelings on the governor? And then on the other side of this, Marisee and Aradel, the chief of police guy, they are trying to do their duty and, you know, keep the peace in the city. But they're beginning to think more and more that by the end of this book, the governor may not, or probably shouldn't be ruling, and the mob is at least right on that point, if not burn the city to the ground, at least dethrone the governor and put somebody else on the throne, in quotes. What do you guys think?
It would not surprise me for the governor to be corrupt. It seems like the system is rather corrupt in general. So for the head of that system to be participating in all that wouldn't shock me at all. But I still wonder a little bit, and maybe it's Bleeder planting the right seeds of doubt in my brain effectively this time, of like, I still think back to the someone else moves us kind of things, or the idea, yes, that Marcy thinks about, that Bleeder planted that evidence. That also seems very plausible, that Marcy was intended to find that evidence, and this is just another bit of driving the system towards anarchy. Marcy thinks this in the chapters. She wants to do the right thing. She's a lawful good alignment. She wants to do the correct thing by the law. But she also realizes that that might be exactly what Bleeder wants her to do, is to take down the governor with this evidence. And so she's very torn. Do I switch sides essentially? Do I acknowledge the system is corrupt and we should take it down? Or do I back this governor that I'm pretty sure is corrupt in order to stop the maniac Condra that's on the loose? That's a tough one.
I feel like compared to the, well, mostly because we're getting a lot more screen time, but I've definitely grown way more invested, I guess, in this specific storyline in Marcy and kind of the position that she's in. This doesn't really address as much of what you were saying, but it just has made me really wonder, like, where is it going, I guess? Like, where does that ultimately go? It's a good like test for her character, I suppose, what you're mentioning, and I hadn't really thought of it so specifically, because you're right, she always is kind of the like you said, lawful good, and so this kind of dilemma is really, like, I feel like especially a challenge, you know.
I think it's kind of funny, end of last book, we were talking about Marcy, we liked her as a character, we thought that was good, but we're like, but surely the story is going to pivot to Steris, right? Book two is going to be all Steris. We're going to learn more about her. She's going to get less weird and more relatable. Nope. We haven't gotten any Steris at all. Hardly at all. Maybe a chapter. Like one chapter.
Yeah, we've gotten two full chapters of Steris. Excuse you.
And it's gone the other way and like leaned even more into Marcy. But I'm with what you said, Paul. I'm actually enjoying that a lot. I'm enjoying the development of her character through this story quite a bit. But she's faced with a tough situation right now.
One other thing, which I think is kind of funny on what you're saying, is that I'm fully holding out hope, actually, that we will come to care for and appreciate Steris as well. We haven't seen it yet, but I'm like, there's still 2.5 books left, I guess. Or I guess less than half of this book, but, you know, 2 full books left. I'm like, you know, I feel like we're gonna get that at some point.
I'm hoping for it too, because at this point, the fiance is the awkward third wheel in this whole story.
Yes, that's true, which is very funny.
I mean, I can't. I don't have a counterpoint to that. You're correct. What about, okay, Elliot? In the outline, you have interesting Renette cameo. With,
oh, yeah,
not 3, not 6, but 7 ... after that. So what did you pick up with on a Renette cameo? What's she up to?
Yeah, that was probably 2 dots too many for where I was going with that. But I did have some interesting thoughts, because in chapter 19... And I was reading this section kind of fast and I was fairly tired, so I'm sure there were hints I missed here. Wayne is disguised as a guard. He's with Milan. They're both guards. They're keeping an eye on the governor. I think this is actually the scene where they're swapping some pretty hilarious impersonation stories. And they're like teaching each other how to do accents and dialects and stuff. Actually, that was one of my more favorite scenes. And then Renette shows up at the door of the palace or mansion or wherever we are with a delivery for wax that she ends up giving to Wayne. And there's 2 big things going on here. One, she hands him a bullet, which Wayne, of course, freaks out about because he's got the anti-guns thing. And Renette is like, get it together. It's just a bullet. Deliver it to wax. You can do it. I couldn't remember, Wax like sent a letter to Renette or something at some point. I felt like, yeah, I was supposed to know what was up with this bullet. And I think I kind of missed it.
Well, are you? Okay. So he dispatched a message to Renette like 3 chapters before this.
Right.
And it was not told to you what that message was.
Okay. It felt like a moment where I was supposed to be remembering something and I wasn't. The only idea that popped into my head was, I think Wax was given 2 of those special Condra serums.
He was.
More. I think it was exactly 2. He's already used 1.
Yep.
My first thought was, ooh, did he have Renette like put the serum into this bullet for him somehow? Because before he was trying to like throw a syringe at at Bleeder, and that didn't work amazingly. I guess he's got his coin shot thing, so he can kind of like shoot it. But Bullet might be more effective. So my guess was like, maybe that's what this is he's got the serum special packaged in a Bullet. The much bigger question, hence all my dot, dot, dots in the outline, is that Renette and Wayne have this hilarious and strange dynamic between the two of them.
Fling.
Wayne thinks that Renette is in love with him. Renette, as far as we know, is seriously actively trying to kill Wayne every time they come into contact with each other.
Or at least extremely annoyed by him, but yes.
I can't tell. Is it actually flirting? Is it just annoyed? Does she actually hate his guts and is really trying to kill him and Wayne's the only thing keeping him alive? I don't really know. But Renette is acting very strangely in this scene. Wayne is firing off all the banter and Renette's not giving it back. And Wayne is like, what the heck is going on here? And he like keeps fishing for it. He keeps firing off the witty statements. Renette's not responding. Wayne comes to a conclusion, I think, that maybe Renette's just scared. Renette is so scared of what's going on that she's acting weird. Scene closes. We move on. Don't think of it much more. I kept reading for a little bit before pausing and flipping back a few pages because a thought hit me. We've been spending this whole book trying to track down Chondra, and we've been learning about the different things that the Chondra do as they're impersonating someone. We get a scene at one point with the cab driver guy who's spending his time in the soothing parlor.
Chapow.
Yeah. I chuckle at that name, by the way, because it sounds like something that would be like in big bold letters in a comic book.
Yeah. Chapow. Yeah, I was thinking the same exact thing.
Sounds like a French dish.
Sure. Anyway, Chapow encounters Bleeder, is pretty traumatized by it. I think my takeaway from that scene was that Bleeder like impersonates him without eating him. Bleeder takes on his face.
Correct.
Freaks him out because he's staring at his own face in this weird Miss Wraithy metamorphosis. Gets away, whatever. Chapow's still alive, and Bleeder's impersonating him. That was kind of new. Didn't have to eat his bones to be him. Back to Renette. Renette's acting weird. The other thing we've learned about Chondra that Milan has coached us on, we've knew this from before with like Tensoon. Chondra have to study their mark, know all the things their mark would know in order to pass off as them. That way they can answer the right questions. They can, you know, say the right things so that they don't give themselves away.
Do their homework.
Yeah.
As Bleeder says.
I got a little bit suspicious for a second because we just saw a character who looks like a character we know, but didn't act like how that character usually acts. What if that was Bleeder or another Chondra who didn't do enough homework and did not fire off the correct responses to Wayne when Wayne was shooting the banter over? Got a lot of the lines right, but maybe not all of it. I don't know. These book series haven't quite given me as much like evidence and bits of pieces to go form crazy theories like this. So I think when I do this, I tend to like fish too deep. I tend to pull out things that aren't evidence and decide that they're incredibly important and run with it. But I don't know. That I was scratching my head after that scene.
Is he on to something, Paul, or no?
I think this is definitely one of the big Elliot predictions that is spot on.
Okay.
I think you're right. I don't know if this is Bleeder, but I bet it is. You're right. Seems fishy. Therefore, it is a Chondra. I mean, we don't really make the rules. It's just kind of how it goes, you know. So that seems accurate to me. So, given the context, it probably would be Bleeder, right? Because
she's showing up at the governor's mansion to deliver a package or at least that's what she claims.
Yeah.
And it would lead, if that's true, if this was Bleeder or a Conjure working with Bleeder or something like that, maybe the bullet that Wax is about to get delivered is not what he thinks it is.
Ooh, yeah. Maybe Bleeder already knows about said bullet that's been delivered.
Right.
It's just getting better and better. This theory is just blossoming before our eyes.
I'm hyper suspicious of the whole Conjure can impersonate anybody thing. I assume so, yeah. I'm very suspicious of everyone we come across in this world, because as we've learned, the Conjure can be anywhere and can be anyone. Wax has started using these secret codes amongst everyone. They have these, you know, there's like a name for that code you use to identify someone. I'm going to go look that up later.
A passcode?
Is that it? No, there's a fancier word. Anyway. Yeah. Renette in the scene might be a Conjure. That's a theory.
All right. I won't disprove or confirm your said theory. We will be finishing the book next week, so you will probably find out by next week. But Elliot, you were just saying how sometimes you try to fish too deep in theories, but what about those random broadsheets that are in this book? Are there some secrets in there?
I will admit, I have not read every single word that has showed up on all the broadsheets.
As you're not expected to.
I know that's terrible, because I'm supposed to be the lore hound who chases down every little bit and nugget, and I feel like those broadsheets are like prime real estate for that kind of thing. Some of them are really boring. Like, it's just an ad for a stuffed animal. I don't want to read them all.
Yeah.
But again, I'm sure that's intentional. Brandon is trying to bore me so that I miss the points, the key little bits that are hidden in the day's newspaper from Ellendale. So I really should be reading every word of them. I read most of them. I have been reading them looking for clues, and I was rewarded this time because the broadsheet at the beginning of chapter 16 in my edition of the book, which I'm sure there could be other places in other editions of the book, has a very clear eyewitness description of a perpendicularity pool not far from Ellendale, apparently, in the mountains. South, I think it says, southern roughs. Mountains south of the southern roughs.
Okay.
And there's this eyewitness description of this crazy being that comes out of the pool.
Can you read it for us?
I can. The article is titled Visitors from Other Worlds. Rarely does the house record bring news of the sensational, but the reputable Lady Nicelle Savage of New Saran has contacted us with a report that will shock you. I was lost in the mountains south of the southern roughs, said Savage, and my fellow travelers had either left me or died. That's when I came upon a mountain pool of the most perfect blue, fed by the melting snows of the heights. Harmony, but I thought I'd reached paradise. As twilight struck early, as it is wont to do in the mountains, Savage saw a haunched figure by the pool. Just a shadow, really, she said, piercing eyes and a face like some otherworldly beast from one of those hideous pulp stories. I regret to say I hadn't the courage to engage this visitor. Instead, its horrible visage struck right at my heart. I let preservation instinct take over and ran for an hour before making camp elsewhere. And then, of course, tauntingly, it says, more on back, column 4. Which is lovingly not provided. Unless it's in one of the other like broadsheets somewhere else, which I did flip briefly through but didn't see it.
I believe there's 4 broadsheets in every book moving forward, so you might find one in the fourth one, because that was the third one you just read.
Oh. Anyway.
What do you think of that, Paul? Did you get anything from the description of the said visitor? Did that ring a bell?
Am I missing it? I think I didn't have anything stick out right away, and it's making me question if I'm, you know, if I'm awake, you know?
Well, Elliot, you have it in front of you. Does it ring a bell for you?
I've read it a couple times and not quite. There's also a picture that goes along with it, which I'm sure is not going to come over great over my camera. But if you have the book, you can maybe look at it, which seems to be a picture of the being that's being described. But it almost seems like the picture is misleading, that it might be pointing us in the wrong direction just because it's a drawing based on a random description. Yeah, all that to say, I don't know. I don't really know. It's a perpendicularity, so I immediately want to say Hoid, but it seems a little bit more non-human than a Hoid.
But I would believe if Hoid was a non-human form someplace randomly. I mean, he's got like all these random tricks up his sleeve, you know.
Light weaving something.
Yeah, exactly.
True.
And you know, of course the guess always with something mysterious or random Easter egg is Hoid. Aside from that, I don't know. I don't know if I been messing something up or what.
If it makes you feel any better, I also don't know.
Okay, that does make me feel better.
Ellie doesn't believe
me. It does not make me feel better. No, I do not.
Wow.
Alrighty. So the last chapter in this episode, chapter 19, Wax is approaching the Chondra homeland, which apparently the entrance to that is the old Vin and Elend tomb that's like in the center of Elendil, and Elendil's kind of sprung up around it. He goes into the museum, goes down like the back pit area, like the holy area that nobody's allowed to go in, goes down the back hallways, blah blah blah, and then he passes he passes something, and then also the Bands of Mourning. What's the
Harmony's
other
Bands?
Harmony's the Bands. Other one. Okay, so that would presumably be the metal mines that Sazed used to remake the world, right? Those would be Harmony's Bands.
Yep.
And then he also passed the Bands of Mourning.
Yeah.
Does it give you any description on what the Bands of Mourning are?
Zero.
Zero? Any predictions on what the Bands of Mourning are if they're next to Harmony's Bands?
I knew you were going to ask this, and I've been thinking about it since I read it, because I immediately noticed it. We've hit a theme now of books teasing the title of the next one.
Yeah.
In the story, because we got Shadows of Self in the first one. Now we've got Bands of Mourning in the second one. But there's no description. It just says, and then Wax saw the Bands of Mourning. Moving on. But yes, I did think of like the bracelets that Sazed wears, I think. Doesn't he have some like bracelety type metal mines? Mm-hmm. That he does. So if the Bands of Mourning are next to Harmony's Bands, which might be the metal mines that he wears, Bands of Mourning could be metal mines of some kind.
I definitely could. And you know what I'm questioning? Did Tyndall ever carry any metal mines or anything that we know of?
I like it.
Just for your reference, Paul, if you don't know, it's mourning as in like you're grieving a loss.
Yes.
As opposed to that, like dawn. So
yes, that's specifically why I was thinking of Tyndall. I'm like,
okay,
there was definitely mourning involved from Sazed's side regarding Tyndall. And so like in my head it adds up if these are next to Harmony's Bands, you know, winky and face.
Wax also passes a statue of the Lady Truth, which is Tyndall, like right before that. So, interesting.
What if... I feel like the Bands of Mourning is not going to be as literal as it sounds. I feel like it's going to be a little more metaphorical. But if it was literal, what if Sazed, like, stored up his sadness at the loss of Tyndall in these metal mines.
Have we ever seen stored emotion before?
I don't know.
I don't think so. I feel like that'd be a wild concept. You have to feel really, really happy for a long time to store up sadness.
Or, this is genuine. What if the year that Sazed was felt so depressed, he was accidentally storing stuff in his mental mines, like spending like a year super depressed, and he was accidentally filling his mental mines with something that he wasn't intending?
You know, this brings up another question, which I raised a long time ago, I think, and that was, could you store intelligence? I feel like if you could store emotion, then you could definitely store, you know, not to name names, but our other notable characters throughout, you know, who have a range of intelligence, you know. We know who I'm talking about. But just in case you don't know, I'm not going to say it.
It does make me wonder, too, if we are talking about some kind of emotional ferrochemy, it seems like something might be off with Sazed. Okay. We went into this era thinking, it's all good. Sazed's got the power. He's a good guy. We're good. We're in the clear. He's got both shards. No problems. There's definitely problems going on out here. And Sazed seems a little bit more, I don't know if I can quite put my finger on it, but not quite handling things super well. Not to say he's doing it wrong. Again, like I said earlier, he seems to be consistent. He's taking a philosophy and he's applying it. But still seems not quite what I expected from the Sazed of the previous book. But what if he's like missing some of his emotions because he stored them all in the metal mines, the bands of mourning? Maybe he's supposed to be feeling that sadness that he stored up in the bands of mourning, and it's messing with him.
To add to this, it is not a foreign idea to us within the Cosmere that something can, you know, feed off of emotion or take away or absolve emotion, you know.
Sure.
So, you know, it could be. I do kind of have the feeling right now, though, that we're going to find out later what the Bands of Mourning are, and we're going to be like, oh, okay, that was kind of silly, you know. Oh,
darn it.
That's what I'm afraid of at the moment, but who knows? Maybe we've cracked a really advanced code, or maybe it's really an unanswered question, but you know.
And that's what I kind of meant. I'm with you. Same thoughts in my head, Paul, because that's what I kind of meant with my, I think Bands of Mourning might be a little more metaphorical, because Alloy of Law was kind of a big metaphor for Miles' 100 lives. And I'm expecting Shadows of Self to be another kind of metaphor about Bleeder that we're going to get here in a few chapters. So Bands of Mourning, yet another metaphor about harmony or what else. But maybe it's different because it's a physical thing. I mean, Wax just walked past it, so maybe it's different in book 3.
Or at least a replica of it. It may not be the original.
Sure.
All right. So going into the finale of this book next week, how do you guys feel about our... I feel like we have 4 B-tier characters that have been introduced in this book, and specifically this part. So let's go through each of them. Bleeder. Do you guys feel like Bleeder is a good antagonist for the book, or do you not care so much? How would you grade Bleeder?
So I want to talk about Bleeder briefly. I think Bleeder is actually a really good villain because this is like a character, like a Chondra or someone that we know and are familiar with, who's gone completely rogue, like ripped out a spike and just gone rogue. And that's kind of hardcore, you know, like we haven't seen anything like that. I feel like we've seen characters that are just bad guys, if you will. We've seen some that are like, you know, maybe betray or kind of an imposter type thing. But this is kind of a unique one of like, they were designed as a Chondra to kind of be, I guess, a servant of originally like the Lord Ruler or whoever, you know? And now they've just kind of like ripped out a spike and gone off the rails. That's kind of wild to me. So in my mind, like the depth, if you will, of Bleeder isn't, I'm not like, wow, this is the coolest villain ever, but really cool premise, which I very much have enjoyed. So overall, I'd give Bleeder a good rating.
Bleeder's growing on me. I did not like Bleeder as a villain in the first half of the book. I felt she was too confusing, too nebulous, hard to understand what we were up against. But the more it's gone on, the more it's playing into this kind of like psychological thriller story where she's messing with people's heads, and that's part of the story. And so it's starting to work for me. If it keeps going in this direction, I think Bleeder's going to shape up into a decent villain, very much in that you're supposed to be confused kind of storyline.
Okay, how about Milan as our guide character coming in, who's just as prone to get drunk with the guys as anyone else?
Milan is pretty fun. She's got some good jokes in there, some good moments. She's also pretty handy in a fight. I don't know. I feel like the comedic relief slot is already taken by Wayne, so a little bit of her falls flat. But overall, I like her as a character. She adds to the cast.
Any strong feelings on Milan, Paul?
For me, I think the value of Milan is knowing her from Erewhon. Okay. Which I think it's really neat that we're getting direct crossover, because so far all of our characters are new, but you know, have some kind of reverent or view, or maybe distant connection to, you know, a reference to our past characters. But Milan was like, she was there during a lot of these events, you know, not that much. She wasn't in the spotlight of Erewhon, but definitely there through all these like notable events and stuff that we've referenced back to. So I think it's really neat. Yeah.
And then the last two all group together. So we have the governor, who we highly suspect is corrupt, unless that's planted by Bleeder. And then we have Aradel, who, as far as we can tell, is the noble guy trying to live up to the honor that he's cultivated throughout his career. He's ascended to chief of police, and he's just trying to do his job of protecting the governor, but also serving the people. So how do you protect the governor and serve the people when it's the people versus the governor? What do you think of those two?
I'm actually kind of suspicious of Aradel, but I think it's because I said this earlier, a little hypersensitive to characters we meet that are not main characters. So I feel bad about it. I shouldn't be suspicious about him, but I'm at that point that you get to, I'm at that point that you get to in like the TV show where you're just suspicious of everyone because you've been burned a couple times because you fell in love with a character and then they turned out to be a villain. And now I'm just like, ooh, is he a Chondra? Ooh, is he a Chondra? She's a Chondra. Yeah, I'm seeing Chondras around all the corners, and I don't know about this Aradel guy. Even though there's no evidence to that whatsoever.
Paul?
I kind of agree with Elliot. I just recently saw, this is kind of an unrelated reference, but I recently saw the play Mousetrap. I don't know if anyone out there has seen Mousetrap, but it's a mystery, and I feel similar to how I did when I watched that, of like plausibly seeing an outcome, seeing evidence for any kind of outcome. I feel like that could happen. Is all I will say about that. Is like, you know, anyone here could be the culprit. A classic whodunit. Well, except in this case, it, you know, with the governor, it's more like him or maybe Bleeder or something, kind of there. So really not the same, but I just wanted to compare, I guess. I think if I had to make a prediction, I do think it's just simply that the governor is corrupt here, but
okay.
I could believe otherwise for sure.
Since we're suspicious of everybody, you guys reminded me of episode 2 of The Alloy of Law when you guys were throwing Marcy under the rug because she suspiciously got captured by the Vanishers and then conveniently escaped. So now she's on the good list. Are you guys still suspicious of Marcy at all? How is that prediction going?
This is one that I feel like I can go back on. I feel like we've seen enough point of view that I may politely rescind my accusation that Marcy is a bad guy. I could be wrong. I could believe it, but it seems like we're going down the more love interest, good character thing, you know. Way less exciting, but you know.
See, now Trevor's sowing the doubt. He's like, oh, but that character you like, what about them?
No, she's had this internal dialogue personally that she got her position. Is it only because of how close I am to Wax? And now there's an inside man and the chief of police's assistant? Really trying to keep a straight face here.
Yeah, you're just messing with us. It's got to be. I'm all in on Marcy. I'm with Paul. She's a good guy. I've enjoyed her development and storyline maybe more than any of the others in this book for sure. So she's one of the good ones. Don't be casting shade on Marcy.
You did it first, not me.
I did. And I'm with Paul. I recant. Marcy is a good one.
Understood. All right. The end of this book specifically for next week. At the end of chapter 19, your cliffhanger was Wax opens the secret door to the Condra homeland with his steel pushing, and a growling voice says from the darkness, "I have been waiting for you." Who is it?
It is without a doubt Tensoon.
Okay, Tensoon.
Without a single doubt?
No. Wow.
That's bold.
Paul?
I was hoping you would tell me.
I just did.
The next page of the book will tell you. I'm not going to tell you.
I guess that's true. I've been thinking that we're going to see Marsh.
Okay.
Ooh,
so could be maybe Marsh. Maybe might Marsh. Be better. I'm going to go with that.
He did give him the book.
Yeah.
Forgot about Marsh.
I'm going to go with that as my final answer.
No Kelsier predictions? No spook
Kelsier, predictions? No, Kelsier's gone for some reason. Harmony makes a weird mention to that.
Did you catch that?
It's a ways back, actually. Uh-huh. It's earlier on in this book, I think. It's not even in these chapters. It's very throwaway comment. I don't remember it well at all, but it was something along the lines of, yeah, Kelsey would have liked that back in time when he was around, and then they move on.
Interesting.
So based on those six words, I've come to the conclusion that Kelsey is not actually in the picture here right now.
Okay. Will the governor survive/stay in power until the end of the book?
No, he will not, but that might actually be fine.
Okay. Yeah.
He feels to me like a this book problem. He doesn't feel scaling to me. So, yeah, I'm going to agree with that. I don't think he's going to make it, at least as we know his position right now. I don't think he's going to remain.
And will the city stay together? Will it burn to the ground like Bleeder once and create something new, or will they find their footing?
So our theme here of this era seems to be free will It seems to be this dilemma between, are we puppets or are we independent and able to make our own choices? So I'm trying to answer that question in the context of that. What plays into more of exploring that free will concept more? I wonder if going into next book, we're going to be faced with the dilemma of we lose our power structure, we lose our governor, we lose our system. What do we do now? Like, do you just let complete free will reign and anarchy ensues? Or do our heroes, are they now faced with like a, maybe you don't want everyone to have full free will because chaos ensues in that, you know, element.
Interesting.
And so maybe Wax gets kind of faced with this whole, should I stand somebody up as a ruler and take away some of that free will for the betterment of all? And then maybe, you know, putting him at odds a little bit with Harmony. Yeah. I'm not sure if that answers your question, but that's my thought train there.
Anything to add, Paul, before we go to our Stormlight review?
I think I'm just ready for the review. I think so. I think I got this.
All right. Sounds good. That will conclude the episode there. We will be finishing Shadows of Self next week. And then we will be doing a wrap-up episode of both Alloy of Law and Shadows of Self after that. So we'll kind of group the two books into one. And the format might be a little weird, but we'll go ahead and do that for episode 199. Let's move into Stormlight Review. Currently, it is 9-6 in Elliot's favor. Paul, you're going to lead this. I'm going to give you a chapter name of a Stormlight Archive chapter. You need to tell me the brief summary of what happened in said chapter. Your chapter name is The Wrong Passion.
The Wrong Passion. This chapter, obviously, is the chapter where Acidon is, you know, has been taken over by the Unmade, whose name I'm blanking on, and is obviously filled with passion, but, you know, the wrong kind. So this is that chapter where they go and, you know, destroy Acidon.
Incorrect, but good guess. Elliot?
So the Thalens talk about passion a fair amount, but so do the Parshendi. I think this is an Eshonai Venli flashback chapter, one of which where they're like arguing with the council of leaders that are all in the different forms, remember, and they're all supposed to like provide the voice of, you know, what that form is good at, passions, if you will. And they're talking about like maybe one of like the new forms they're like discovering or want to discover, something that
you started off so strong.
Oh no.
And then you fumbled it both. Okay. If you put both of yours together, you actually get the answer here. Paul, you had a good guess. The Wrong Passion is the end of Oathbringer, when the Battle of Thalen Fields.
It is the Thalens.
When Amaram's army gets overtaken by the Thrill and attacks Thalen City. You guys remember this? So Odium flips Amaram's army back onto the Alethi in Thalen City. So Paul, there is an Unmade involved. Elliot, there is Thalens involved, and Parshendi involved, and Passions involved. So you guys are within the inner ring of the dartboard, but not quite there. So not bad, not bad.
I'm thankful for how close we were, at least. And in my mind, we just both earned a point, so it's still tied.
Okay,
but we have, it's 1-1.
Yes, you so both zero earned zero. 60 okay. points in that question. Congratulations. Okay,
a point 60-60. Yeah, yes. That's great. Off to a great start.
All right, Elliot, Here comes your quote ID. Who's talking? You've got tenacity, a stupid amount of it. You have good form, and you think well in a fight.
There's a lot of persevering through tough battles scenes in Stormlight. But this is Zile.
You are correct. It is Zile.
Is he speaking to Adolin?
No, he's talking to Kaladin.
Okay, that Kaladin, was my second guess.
Kaladin loses his head in the dueling ground and goes and starts punching Adolin. And Zile then spars Kaladin and compliments him on his form. And then the rest of that quote is, but you hardly know what you're doing against shard bearers. So yes. he begins to train him against shard blades and shard plate. And that is how we get to Honor is dead, but I'll see what I can do and all that fun stuff.
It definitely sounded like the mostly condescending tone of Zile.
Yes. Good job.
I'm impressed. That was a tough one.
All right, Paul, here's your review. I initially gave this book a 1 star. Up until the 42% mark, I had stopped and started this book repeatedly, carrying a small but incessant hope of this book getting better. It did. I don't like Kaladin. How often do I need to hear about how honorable and selfless he is? But I do like Shallan. I liked her humor, and I was so invested and on edge of her plot. Dalinar has become more interesting. The characters and story are a bit formulaic. I liked Syl and Shallan. I had my gripes, but I'm happy I continued, and will be continuing on to other Sanderson titles.
I'm really fighting what book it is. I feel like I could see this as any of the books. I'm going to go with my initial gut, which is that this is for Oathbringer. That was my initial guess. I think this is Oathbringer, and I'm going to go with 4 stars.
Okay.
I'm probably going to regret both of those, but I'm just going to go with my gut. I might explain more later, but there's not really much reason to this, as we've discussed before. So,
okay, Paul's already guessed, so I can verbally process. The 42%, incredibly specific, tells me this is an audiobook listener. Nobody with
it's actually an ebook listener.
Ebook, oh, yeah.
Yep. Okay,
yeah,
fair.
Ebook tells you a percentage.
Yeah. True. Okay.
Kindle reader.
Some kind, e-reader. But I don't know, that really tells me much. I don't think it's Way of Kings. They're talking about too much character development. Things like Dalinar's got more interesting. That seems to imply to me we're in at least book 2. I'm torn between Words of Radiance and actually Rhythm of War a little bit, because Shallan has some really interesting development in Rhythm of War. But they rated it 1 to begin with, and then they changed it. I think this is Rhythm of War. I think this is a slightly weird one. And that they were bored a bit by Rhythm of War, but then got excited with the Shallan developments that happen in Rhythm of War. I think Paul is on with the 4 out of 5, so Rhythm of War, 4 out of 5.
Okay. No points on the board for either of you. This is a 3 out of 5
okay.
For the Way of Kings.
What?
Okay. Wow.
The one that both of you quickly dismissed, that is not the Way of Kings. Yes, apparently it's the Way of Kings.
I thought it could have been any of the first 3 books because the reader liked the Shallan parts.
Okay.
But that,
do you not like Shallan in Rhythm of War, Paul?
She's okay. She's okay in Rhythm of War.
She's way better in Rhythm of War than she is in the Way of Kings.
I do agree. But if this person seemed to be a reluctant reader, I didn't think that they had made it to Rhythm of War, because I'm like, I don't know. I don't know. You never know with these.
All right, Elliot, you're leading 1-0, and this final trivia question goes to you. What form does Venli take as a regal in Oathbringer?
Oh, shoot. I was already thinking down these lines earlier with my chapter guess. As a regal. Am I overthinking that part? I probably am.
Do you want me to define regal for you? I can do that.
I mean, if you want to, I'll take a hint for sure.
So a regal is a singer who has a void spren in their gem heart, but is not a fused. So they're not a knight's radiant. They're just right. An elevated singer, like that's not in like dull form, if that makes sense.
Okay. I think the answer has to be then it's when she like first unlocks that first next level form, which I think is storm form.
Incorrect. Paul, your turn.
So I think what's going to bite me is the names. I could, Elliot has guessed, so I'm going to talk through as much as I can and try to think on this. In my head, there is a form that is like the next level art form, if you will. Like she's okay. In some kind of like scholarship mode. Like, because I feel like I remember that because Eshonai was like the storm form, the warrior type. Venli was like the artistic scholarly type. And so there's some kind of form. And so I think I guess I have to go with. So I think I'm wrong, but I think there's one beyond this that's what I'm trying to get to. I think it's like art form or whatever it is. I think that's one of the forms. I could be totally off. But I think there's like art form 2.0, which is the one she's actually in, but I don't know a name for it. So we go with art form. Maybe that's not even a form. I don't remember.
You are close. Your thought process is not a poor one, but I can't give you the point. Okay. So the original five forms that were introduced in Words of Radiance are dull form, mate form, war form, nimble form, which is like they're scouting, like jumping over chasms form, and then art form is the fifth. Okay. And then there's a lack of form, which is like what the rest of the parchment are on Roshar. The one that they unlock at the end of Words of Radiance, Elliot, you're correct, is storm form, comes with the Everstorm, right? You get a basic storm spren, you get storm form. After that, between Words of Radiance and Oathbringer, she is gifted envoy form. And she is the envoy of Odium to the rest of the parchment on Roshar.
Yeah.
She is an envoy form for all of Oathbringer.
I should have got that one. I could have got that.
I am glad to know that my train of thought was correct. I did not remember the name and all the specifics, but I am glad to know that I was on the right trail. Because that was more intentional than my guess at the beginning of this for the chapter title. Total, like, no idea. This one, I had an educated guess, so that was good.
All right, so the point does go to Elliot, so it is 10-6 after a 61-60 lead on this week.
Yeah.
So we will reconvene next week with the end of Shadows of Self. Thanks for joining me, Paul and Elliot.
All yellow pants.
Sayonara.
It's bones without soup.
I'm obviously missing something.
That's the other password. That's the password he gives.
Oh, that's right. That's right. I remember the bones. That's okay. I totally goofed that. Whoops.